Good afternoon. You are listening to The Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Dylan Smith, the editor and co-publisher of the Tucson Sentinel, sitting in for Bill, who's on a much-deserved break today. I'm joined here in the studio by our senior reporter, Paul Ingram. Thanks for doing this. I guess you were voluntold to be here.
I was voluntold, you know. But that's fair.
But you have a little bit of expertise in the topic we're going to be digging into today, so yep. It's great to have you here. Also joining us is our guest in the hot seat, Russ McSpadden of the Center for Biological Diversity.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Very much appreciate it. I guess, you know, to kick things off, just give people a quick synopsis of what the Center for Biodiv is. What do you guys do?
Sure. Yeah. The Center for Biological Diversity, we're a national environmental organization, but we're headquartered here in Tucson. And, you know, our origin story started in the Southwest. With all kinds of lore of, like, you know, four hippies in a yurt with a fax machine, you know, suing over Mexican spotted owls. And I work here in Tucson. I live and work out of the Tucson office, and I'm in the Southwest program. So it's a regional program that's, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, parts of California and Colorado. And the work I do is mostly in Arizona and a little bit in New Mexico, and it often involves, you know, protections of wildlife habitat, protection of public lands, protection of threatened and endangered species. And what that looks like on a day-to-day level is often, you know, bumping up against sort of bad projects that would impact those things. So things like the border wall, things like mining in the Santa Ritas or in the Patagonias, things like I-11, the proposed, you know, new interstate that would run, you know, right, you know, set to run right near Saguaro East, Saguaro National Park, and you know, the national a couple of national monuments, including Sonoran Desert National Monument, and lots of, you know, lots of projects like that. So I often am writing NEPA comments when we see them come on board. I might be in the field. I might be helping our lawyers get documentation of what's going on.
So the center files a whole lot of lawsuits.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it, but yep. Also a whole lot of stuff leading up to potentially suing the federal government or state government or a developer or somebody over how a, you know, particular development might impact an endangered species or a threatened species.
Yeah, correct. It's sort of the last resort. It's what we're probably most known for are...
Those are certainly the stuff we get all the press releases about.
Yeah, you get the press releases.
But there's a lot of work that goes into it before that, right?
Of course. I mean, we're doing public education. We're meeting with, you know, city, county, state officials, federal officials, you know, that sort of thing. And we're, you know, gathering and synthesizing the science on the ground to figure out what the impacts will be. We're ground truthing to see what impacts these projects might have. You know, I have wildlife cameras in lots of places just so we can pretty much keep track of, you know, what's going on out there. These aren't scientific studies. These are just generally we want to know what species are roaming. And so when a project does come, you know, we have a lot of information ready to challenge.
I think one thing I'm always struck with your work is that you spend a lot of time hiking out in the wilderness, was kind of doing an advocacy. I mean, you have a great social media. Your photos are always amazing. I'm always sort of sometimes a little jealous of, like, I wonder where that is. You know, tell me a little bit about, like, how you do that, how that work gets done, and, you know, why, in part, I think you kind of show a lot of this wilderness, a lot of the borderlands. Why do you think it's important to do that?
Yeah, I think, you know, people kind of are led by their hearts in some ways. You know, we can advocate based on the law, which is important. We can advocate based on the science. But in terms of the photography and just showing the landscape, I think people immediately feel what I see when I'm out there, which is, you know, some of the most incredible wild country I've seen anywhere on the planet. You know, I grew up in a military family and we lived all over the United States and abroad. We lived, stationed a couple places abroad. And the borderlands between northern Mexico and southern Arizona in particular, that's that transboundary Sky Island region and the grasslands and the desert, you know, it's this continental convergence zone of all these different ecosystems. And it's just, to me, it's there's nothing like it that I've ever seen. And so I love to share that. I love to fight for that. The Center for Biological Diversity and the staff that work specifically in the Southwest, we fight to protect these places. We want to see them protected. We want to uphold those protections once they're there. And so it's constant, watchdogging. And so sometimes that's might be what I'm doing in the field, is just seeing, going back to a place I haven't been in 4 or 5 months and seeing what's going on through trail cameras, and also just by getting, you know, up in the high country to take a look. And I also use drones sometimes.
Speaking of being, especially, you know, the borderlands and, mm-hmm. and you know, legal fights, tell us about the Center for Biodiversity's lawsuit about the San Rafael Valley. First, maybe for our listeners, where is the San Rafael Valley and what the issue is?
Yeah, the San Rafael Valley is, south of Tucson, about a 2-hour drive, depending on which way you go, south of Sierra Vista, south of Sonoyta, just on the other side of the Huachuca Mountains, sort of in between the Patagonia Mountains and the Huachuca Mountains. And it's this incredible grassland valley that connects these really amazing sky islands, including further on to the Santa Ritas and the Whetstones. And these are places where we've seen, more jaguar detections in modern history have been in this corridor. This, we might call it the San Rafael Wildlife Corridor. During the first Trump administration, this valley was spared. In some ways that was the greatest victory we had, was that this particular valley didn't get walled, because it's, we care about all the places along the border, but this place is just so critically special. But in June, Department of Homeland Security, Secretary Kristi Noem issued waivers, for this valley. And it was a big punch in the gut, for so many people. There's so many, conservation organizations and just, Arizona residents that have this place sits really deep in their heart, and it's really a special and important place to them, where they've, grown up camping or taking their families, or, in terms of, organizations like Sky Island Alliance and so many others have just spent decades and decades working on restoration efforts here to keep this place really wild.
Is also like the riparian area, and the grasslands are actually protected by state land also.
There's state protected land for the grasslands. And I should say, it's the headwaters for the Santa Cruz River, is in this valley. And then, the northern watershed of the San Pedro River is also here. So that water comes down as, as monsoon rains or as winter snowmelt, and flows south out of the Huachuca Mountains, out of Arizona, into Mexico, into this beautiful protected area, 10,000 acre grassland conservation ranch called Rancho Los Fresnos. And there's, ciénagas there, these kind of desert wetlands ecosystems with beavers and, just countless bird species. And that ultimately all flows into the San Pedro River before it takes a sharp turn and flows right back in the United States. And for listeners that don't know, the San Pedro River, studies have found that the vertebrate diversity of that river is far more than places like Yellowstone. Or Yosemite, just the amount of species of, jaguar and ocelot all the way down to javelina and all of these, just an incredible amount of vertebrate species there.
Yeah, we often talk about marquee species of like the jaguar and ocelot, but these things also affect lots of other species. They're keystone species, but also small species that maybe we kind of forget about.
Yeah, exactly.
What specifically about, especially the new version of the border wall, but any kind of, substantial border barrier, how does that affect species, especially, whether it's, kind of, the most famous, like the jaguar, but, right down to, those tiny little, very kind of focused species.
Yeah.
Why is this a problem in your view?
Yeah. I mean, it's always interesting because, to put it in context, I always like to think of the border wall as being, potentially one of the greatest ecological I'm not even sure exactly how to put it, but I think there's nothing that can quite parallel what it would mean if this goal of walling off, you know, almost 2,000 miles of the southern border were ever to become true. And it's getting to look like it's possible. You know, I think, you know, a decade ago, we were like, oh, this could never happen. But, you know, the Trump administration just last month waived all procurement laws for the entire border. That's the first time waivers have ever been used for that. And the procurement laws are a little wonky, but that's how they waived all the laws that slow down the process of getting a contract. So now they can just hand a contract for, you know, $500 million away without competitive bidding or, you know, background checks on these companies. They can just hand it off.
And that's on top of all the environmental waivers.
I mean,
part of the waiver and part of the lawsuit is that they're waiving all the environmental laws, also like the Indian Graves Act, all these other associated laws. They're really kind of built to maybe not necessarily slow down construction, but put a little bit of thoughtfulness into the construction, and all of that's been waived as part of this process, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
are somebody who is concerned about border security and thinks that we do need to have, you know, a much tighter control of what's going on there, why is this a problem for the animals?
Yeah, and just to finish that point, you know, if a wall stretching across the entire breadth of North America is the goal and the plan. So from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico. So that at this point, that's the entire breadth of North America, this section on the southern border. And this would stop, the wall has about a 4-inch gap in between each of the steel bollards that are there. And so 4 inches stops a whole lot of species. You can think of the Sonoran Desert Tortoise, most of, unless they're quite small, are unable to pass across the border. Species like pronghorn and, you know, mountain lions and deer and javelina, you know, the Skyon Alliance has done a 5-year study down there where they put their cameras on all these different types of border barriers, including this new, you know, 30-foot tall steel bollard wall. And what the wall stops is really devastating. And they, you know, javelina trying to cross through gets stuck and they find it dead, you know. And so the same goes with bears. So you're looking at all of these populations of wildlife that we're talking about. These are transboundary species. And so it, you know, it varies on which way they will be impacted. You know, we'll see if the wall is built in. Jaguars will have no natural recovery north of the border. You know, we've spent decades and decades. The federal government has spent decades and decades, you know, between listing and a recovery program. And designating critical habitat, you know, put a lot of time and effort into this conservation to reestablish a healthy population.
The new version that is being built in so many places is 30 feet tall, roughly.
Yeah,
30 feet and that's very different than the kind of 18 to 20 foot that was erected in previous decades. We've seen photos of mountain lions up on top of the, you know, the 15, 18, 20-foot wall because they can, you know, manage to get themselves up that high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
30 feet, not quite so much.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's my one sense is like the 30-foot wall, because it also is combined with roads to do the construction, and then there's kind of a cleared area, also tends to kind of interrupt you know, birds, insects, you know, species you sort of go, well, they can fly over, but they tend not to. It tends to cut off those species as well, right?
Yeah, and there's this, you know, endangered species, the Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl, that's, you know, kind of a famous sentinel of the Sonoran Desert. And, you know, studies have shown that those are really low flying species. So people are like, oh, birds will be fine, you know. But this owl is a low flying owl, often no higher than 8 feet off the ground, you know, and so they just don't do that. They're swooping species, and they have been known to be impacted by the border wall. So even bird species, and then there's these other effects, like just the construction of border wall, for example. And during 2019 and 2020, the Trump administration built across about 30 miles of the San Bernardino Valley. In sort of extreme southeastern Arizona. And to do that, they pump water on site, they drill wells, And they were pumping upwards of 700,000 gallons of water a day to mix concrete for that valley. And right in the middle of that valley is the San Bernardino National Wildlife Refuge that has this ancient artesian spring system. This was protected in the early 80s to protect that system and the endangered species that live there. And some of these springs were going dry because of how much water the border patrol, the border contractors were pumping. Luckily, the Fish and Wildlife Service stepped in with, you know, a pump system, basically putting the springs, the artesian system was destroyed, the pressure system that pushes this water to the surface. And the Fish and Wildlife Service stepped in and built a basically a life support system for this. But, you know, that spring system may never naturally occur again outside of that. That system. And this is the headwaters of the Rio Yaqui that flows into Mexico, and it's home to Yaqui catfish and Chiricahua leopard frog, these species that are just barely clinging to survival, you know, as our wetland ecosystems are drying up in the Southwest. And so, you know, there's concerns for that in the San Rafael Valley, that the groundwater pumping will cause significant impacts to the springs there. And to the wildlife.
There are folks out there who would say, yeah, so what? I want to close the border, and who cares about the leopard frog? Why is it important in your mind to make sure that these little basically niche species are protected?
Yeah, I mean, I would first say, you know, obviously I'm not an engineer. And I don't work on border security, but I spend an incredible amount of time at the border in places where there is no border wall and places where there is border wall. And I can tell you, border wall seems to have no connection to human migration across the border. The most I've ever seen people coming across the, you know, back, I guess it was maybe 2022, when I might see a couple hundred people crossing a day in one specific spot, which was Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument.
Where there was a substantial barrier right?
Trump had, this is post-Trump's entire valley being walled in by a 30-foot border wall. And yeah. So that's where they were coming. And I was also spending time in the San Rafael Valley where there is no border wall. And I have never once seen anyone crossing there. I'm not saying they don't, but it was night and day that a location where there's a border wall was getting just incredible amounts of traffic in the place where there isn't, there wasn't. So, I mean, there's obviously other factors involved in the way that people move, the reasons that people decide they're going to cross a border. And it doesn't seem that the wall is a make or break issue for many of those people.
I mean, I think what's interesting about Sen, you know, the Oregon Pipe area especially, is like there you have Highway 2, which is a big Mexican highway. It was really easy for people to get to that spot to cross. That had been a place where people had crossed for a while and sometimes in pretty large groups over the years. They built the 30-foot high wall and people were still crossing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we reported on one story, and it was actually right in November 2023, where I talked to almost 750 people who were there, and also the guys who were cutting the border wall with you know, battery-powered tools. And so it's sort of remarkable to think about that same place in 2017 when it had no wall and there was almost nobody out there.
Yeah.
And now with the San Rafael Valley, I mean, there certainly are some crossings, but they seem pretty rare where places that are further east in Cochise County. Cochise County's Sheriff Daniel said at one point that they had up to 300 crossings per month still, but that's also a place with a lot of border wall. So it's sort of interesting how this doesn't seem, these things seem disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to be too anecdotal, but, you know, you see that, you know, the Trump administration is clamoring that numbers are down, border crossings are down, which is true. And it's also, if you turn on Fox News, no one is screaming that the border wall is open, which is, you know, there was a sort of a welcoming, I think, by certain media outlets with fear-mongering just describing these places as open, you can cross, and people came. So it's just, you know, I'm not going to convince someone to care about a little frog at the border over border security. But
why do you care about the little frog?
Yeah.
that's you know,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, because frogs are awesome, and I've loved them since I was a child. But, you know, this is a part of America's heritage. You know, when we talk about the Endangered Species Act being waived, what's being waived is the sort of intentions and desires of a nation to protect the biodiversity of our country. It's incredible that we have a law. Like, almost no other nation has such a strong law that protects biodiversity, protects endangered species, protects those things that are clinging to survival. And, you know, it's one thing that I'm like super proud of about this country, that we actually pulled together a law like this where we're like, you know, we're going to dedicate time and resources and, you know, legislative power to protecting the Chiricahua leopard frog, by God. And because, you know, Bob in Alabama might not care, but this species matters, and a cascading effect of, you know, just what happens when you remove one animal species from the environment. And we know there's cascading issues, and, you know, there's ecosystem services that animals like this provide. And, you know, there's economic value to having, you know, national park lands along the border that protect these beautiful species, like at Quito Baquito Springs. These are unique and rare things that I think a lot of Americans treasure. And sure, not everyone's going to, you know, we can't convince everybody to care about a frog or the jaguar or the pronghorn or any of these things. But, you know, this is still a pretty wild west that we live in. And I think we can, you know, we can turn this ship around and keep it that way. That's my hope. And I hope people care about wide open landscapes and beauty and freedom. You know, I mean, I see these wildlands out there as a real sense of freedom in this country. And I think, you know, yeah, I don't want to point fingers, but I think it's real small-minded to just give up on the idea of huge sweeping wild places that don't have a border wall running through them. And
we were talking about the leopard frog, and speaking of hopping, we need to hop on over and listen to some messages from some fine Buckmaster Show sponsors. First, I should remind folks that with the hurly-burly of the holidays coming up, if you need a quick break and you are up near the corner of Swan and Sunrise, you should probably swing by Mona's Danish Bakery. Get yourself a cup of coffee. Probably pick up a Danish Kringle or two for your holiday parties so you can have an amazing dessert that you don't have to cook. So Mona's Danish Bakery, go check them out, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Check out the project list for a new $2.67 billion regional transportation plan that Pima County voters will consider next March. The RTA Next Plan proposes improvements in the greater Tucson region to reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. It will also expand transit, bike, and pedestrian options for another 20 years. Voters will be asked to okay a half-cent countywide sales tax to continue RTA improvements. The tax rate will not increase. Learn more about the proposed plan and projects at RTANext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio here on KVOI 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Dylan Smith, the editor and co-publisher of the Tucson Sentinel, sitting in for Bill today, who's taking a much-deserved break. I'm joined by our senior reporter, Paul Ingram. And in the hot seat here is Russ McSpadden of the Center for Biological Diversity. And we had a couple more things to dig into. Take it away, Paul.
Yeah, one thing I think was really interesting is maybe the talk about the contrast between the different administrations. I mean, sometimes I think we focus on talking about the Trump administration, especially when it comes to the border and the border wall. But it's not like Trump invented the construction of the border wall. I mean, that's something that's been around for a while, right? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, that, but also how the center sort of, you know, ends up sort of opposing different presidential administrations, how that sort of ends up working? I mean, I think there's, you know, maybe we sort of get very excited about this sort of stuff during these new administrations, but maybe we sort of miss when Biden does it.
Was Obama or Biden, were they the good guys working with you? Or right. It seems like you were still filing a lot of lawsuits then.
Yeah. If you go back and look at our press release list, you can see that during the Obama administration and the Biden administration that we filed an incredible amount of lawsuits over a slew of issues, often around, you know, threatened and endangered species, failures for those administrations, Fish and Wildlife Service, to move forward with listings and, lots of other things. So, I mean, I think broadly speaking, coming from an environmental advocacy angle, it's an uphill battle, regardless of Democrat or Republican administration. I think Trump is a bit of a different animal, and especially in this second round, with real attacks on, I think, the foundations of environmental law, NEPA, and the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act, you know, really attempting to roll back, what makes those laws really work to protect public health and wildlife and wild places.
They're kind of rewriting the boundaries, trying to rewrite the rules by which everybody has to play by, right?
Yeah, they're definitely trying to, you know, and it's even interesting to compare the first Trump administration from the second. I mean, in the first Trump administration, it was really a clown car of wild activity that was really fruitless, generally speaking, in terms of the environment. A lot of rhetoric about dismantling the ESA or, you know, trying to get, you know, rescind national monuments like Bear's Ears and all of these things. There were those attempts, but now it seems much more concerted. It seems like he has a cadre of very well-equipped, adept folks that understand, you know, how effective we were pushing back and how effective, the environmentalists were at pushing back in the first administration. And I think they're ready for us this time around. So we're just a year in and it's looking pretty ugly.
You know, one thing I think we talked about the border wall, but we haven't really talked about mining. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's interesting is like the Biden administration created the sort of Fast 41 plan, which was a way of not to avoid the laws that were set, but to sort of expedite the process. Mm-hmm. Basically, let's do it as fast as possible so that we could do the mine. And one of the mines that's really benefited of it is with the South 32 mine, mm-hmm. Which is in the Patagonia Mountains, right. near where we were talking about before, mm-hmm. in the San Rafael Valley. That's a mine that's really pushed forward. Mm-hmm. The center has had some opposition to it, and also opposition to some other water testing, mm-hmm. mining, kind of early mine activities, mm-hmm. by a couple of their companies. Talk about a little bit about how, you know, the center doesn't fight every single issue. There's some things you sort of allow. On the other hand, the center has been more involved in resolution. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, talk about a little bit about how the center sort of sees mining in Arizona and what you oppose and what you're willing to maybe move forward.
Yeah, sure. We often get, it's often claimed that, you know, we sue over every mine proposal and every project. Basically, if anything is happening, we sue over it, which is absolutely not true, because you know I'm the one who tracks mining in Arizona, and we basically look at a nexus whether or not we're going to engage, and it's a bit of a, you know, I'll create basically a diagram to figure out, you know, is this affecting public lands, are there extinction level, could this cause an extinction level event for a particular species, mm-hmm. And then, you know, those are the two main parts. You know, is this coming into a place where we have been looking at major connectivity issues that, you know, this is going to disrupt the movement of a specific species that we're working with, you know, that we're trying to protect. And then also some ancillary things, like is there significant public health impacts that this could cause, and by reference to that, is there also community opposition? Are there impacts to tribes, and is there tribal opposition? And we will look at this sort of nexus of things that might come to play, and then we'll discuss whether or not we're going to take this on. And so, you know, you can see with Copper World, what, you know, formerly known as Rosemont.
They just switched the side of the mountain.
Switched the side of the mountain, with their phase two being back over to the Rosemont side. The whole goal is to get the Rosemont pit. And so, you know, jaguar habitat, you know, we had cameras out there that detected ocelot. There's a full, you know, five or six threatened or endangered species downstream. You know, yellow-billed cuckoo and Mexican spotted owl. And we jumped right on that. And also tribal opposition. You know, we know that that's a really important mountain range to the Tonatam, and mm-hmm. specifically to the San Javier district of the Tonatam. And so we're still in that in that fight. They've got the west side is all mostly private property.
Yeah, it's an old former mine.
Yeah, but there's a couple of they don't have enough land for the tailings yet that they're trying to get from the Arizona Land Department, and so, you know, we've been pushing back on that.
Are there points where you end up having an actual positive outcome, a fruitful discussion with a mining company or a logging company or somebody who's, you know, trying to do work in an area where they can sort of remediate or dial things back, change their plans a little bit?
I am sure there are, but none are.
You're just constantly at loggerheads.
Yeah, we are often at loggerheads. I mean, we do tend to sometimes come to agreements through the process of litigation. Yeah. I mean, we just had that with I-11 where, you know, they have agreed to halt all phase two studies of this project until they go back and do what we sued them for failing to do. That was to look at the park values of the national park, which they failed to do, to do ESA consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service over, I think, upwards of seven threatened and endangered species that they failed to do.
Under the Endangered Species Act.
Under the Endangered Species Act. So they've agreed to do that. And so everything is on pause while we see how that all plays out. And those were conversations between our lawyer and their lawyers and coming to an agreement. So that those kinds of things can certainly happen. But sometimes, you know, those are issues maybe better raised by local communities, you know, and you know, once a lawsuit is filed, I think, you know, we're just often at loggerheads, I think, because it's just two diametrically opposed points of view, is that this mountain should be mined, or this mountain should be preserved for the wildlife that live there. Yeah.
Your work is mostly focused here in Arizona, in the Southwest, but the Center for Biological Diversity, even though you're headquartered here, you're a national organization that does work all over the place. Can you just give us a quick summary of the other kinds of things you were working on that maybe aren't in the desert?
Yeah, sure. I mean, gosh, it's hard for me. I mean, it's hard for me to keep up with what the Center for Biological Diversity is doing. You know, I open my emails in the morning, and you know, there's four lawsuits and there's a new species has been listed, you know, thanks to our efforts or an agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, we have this incredible team in Florida, that was, you know, our lawyers were part of the lawsuit against alligator Alcatraz, working with the Miccosukee tribe and others. You know, their legal expertise was used in this, and we're a party to that lawsuit. But in that state, you know, they're working to list and protect, you know, all kinds of species like the Miami tiger beetle that was going to have a development built on its habitat, you know. So they're working really hard in Florida, you know, on manatees and all of these other species. And we have staff in Alaska. We have staff. It would probably be easier to say where we don't have staff, but I mean, we have staff across the country, including in Mexico, you know, who Alex Oliveira, who does really incredible work down there on vaquitas and, you know, and jaguars in Mexico and other marine wildlife. And we have, you know, a huge team in California that often is, you know, fighting new developments in fire-prone forests is one big thing that's going on there, or working to protect, you know, the really dwindling population of mountain lions, the southern population of mountain lions in Southern California that, you know, growth, urban development is really, you know, moving into their habitat more and more. Gosh, I mean, if you went through our website, you would just, you could find, you know, activities happening everywhere, Texas and the middle of the country. And yeah.
One of the things that too is the Center for Biodiversity sort of worked on sort of the on a small scale towards protecting specific species, but also is trying to kind of do some advocacy against the potential for climate change because that has effects across. There's one species that you're specifically here, not suing yet over, but kind of a precursor, that's certainly early work of trying to protect it because it's a species that's habitat is changing because it's getting hotter.
Yeah, the Yarrow spiny lizard, which is this, you know, this population, the Mule Mountain population, which
near
is
the ones near Bisbee.
Yeah, near Bisbee. So that's a species of lizard that's affected by climate change. But, you know, obviously the increase in drought, but in particular, the increase in the length of extreme heat in this state is pushing that species, you know, up in elevation. But the Mule Mountains only go so high. At some point, they're going to the species is going to peak out.
And don't they become more isolated?
Yeah.
You know, as both animals and plants kind of have to migrate upwards, they become much more isolated from each other. And you no longer have a good breeding population.
Right.
Kind of the same problem that you see with building a giant border wall in between them, right?
Yeah, and this is similar to like the Mount Graham red squirrel that's been an issue that people might have heard about for so long. You know, this is a species that's been naturally isolated since the last ice age. It's been on in the Pinaleños, and it lives at it's evolved to live at a particular elevation, and as climate change continues, it's getting pushed, you know, higher and higher up the mountain until there is no more mountain, and then what does the species do? And so, you know, we fought for years for that, for the Mount Graham red squirrel and from development as well. But yeah, I think this, you know, we're going to see more and more of that across the country. These sort of pockets of where species are being pushed to the brink of their survivability.
We're going to have to let you go in about a minute here, but do you have a bright note to leave us with rather than a downer like that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would say that, we have incredible wild places in this country. They're still beautiful. They're still incredibly wild. I was on a trail the other day that a jaguar walked down just weeks before, and it's still a really wild place. I still think that there's a lot to protect, and I think we can do it.
All right. Yeah. Russ McSpadden from the Center for Biological Diversity. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Russ.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Paul and I will be back in a couple of minutes to run through some other news of the week. We'll be right back here on the Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back to The Buckmaster Show here on KVOI. I'm Dylan Smith, the editor and co-publisher of the Tucson Sentinel, sitting in for Bill. And joining me here in the studio is our senior reporter, Paul Ingram. And many thanks to Russ McSpadden of the Center for Biological Diversity for sitting in the hot seat and running through some of what that national organization located here in Tucson is up to. We've got a handful of minutes to talk about the other news of the week, Paul. And sure. You were on the scene for what is, you know, maybe not exactly a new development, but a prominent example of something that's been going on.
Yeah. So I spent Tuesday, most a good chunk of Tuesday morning at 100 Acre Wood. And 100 Acre Wood was supposed to be a bike park. But over the last several years, it's turned into Tucson's largest homeless encampment. It's been a place where there are lots of people who have been living. They're mostly living in kind of, you know, little sort of, some people are just living in tents, but some people have kind of built themselves their own kind of like homesteads in some ways. It's some of it's fairly remarkable. And really,
that's a plot of land like right off of Golf Links, actually not too far from here from the KVOI studios here, right. The Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio.
Exactly.
It's just over the overpass here.
It's
right?
Just over the overpass, and it's also, it's land that's owned by DM. It's leased to the city, and the city has had it for a long while. And really over the last several months, really over the last 18 months, the city has tried to clear it as a homeless camp, but rather than just simply going in and sort of sweeping everybody out, and making them go somewhere else. They've really tried to put in services. They've tried to encourage people not just to leave the spot, but to take housing, to take some kind of different services that are available to the county. And over the last few months, they've said, hey, we're going to build this bike park finally. This is something that's coming. And in July, they really started pushing people out. Earlier this month, they gave them a deadline of 2 weeks, and the deadline came Tuesday. So on Tuesday, everyone else who was left there was asked to leave.
That was about how many people?
Roughly 40 people. It's a little hard to get an exact census because, you know, the city said they engaged about 30 people, but other people just simply, they saw the police and services in Pima County and city services coming and they just left. But roughly about 40 people were there on Tuesday. And the city then went through and started cleaning up the camp, which meant people had to gather their stuff, and what they didn't gather got thrown to a dumpster and became trash. So the city, I think they said they removed about 296 tons of material over Tuesday and Wednesday that was there. So that includes all sorts of stuff. I mean, it includes personal effects, tents, but also there was a trailer that was mostly at the back of a Ford F-150. There were some ATVs that were really broken. There was a golf cart, and there was lots of kind of materials. Mm-hmm. So this is part of this thing that's been happening for a while. I mean, they've said roughly 78 households took services since July until now. And then even during that day, they managed to get roughly 30 people to take something. Some people got apartments, they got keys to apartments. Some people went to rescue missions. Some people went to the Star Village, which is the kind of city-sanctioned homeless encampment. And so, you know, there's this kind of concerted effort. And I think it's part of the larger, you know, we've had this kind of large argument over the summer about what the city and the county can do about homelessness and also about people who are using drugs in plain view because they don't have anywhere to go and how those kind of things interconnect. This sort of idea of city safety and how the city can improve this. And so, you know, it's sort of interesting as I was out at the homeless encampment watching them put stuff into dumpsters. One of our other reporters, Jim Nitzel, was at a meeting that was the combined forces of the city and county who were all together to really talk about the issues of safety.
We've got to go in just a moment here, but I need to take advantage of the platform Bill has provided us today and let folks know that if they want more of the in-depth, long-form, long-term, really getting down into the nitty-gritty kind of reporting that Paul Ingram and Jim Nitzel and Mia Courtwright and everybody else at the Tucson Sentinel does, we're a local nonprofit. We are supported by community contributions. And now, through the end of the year, through midnight on December 31st, your donation to the Tucson Sentinel's newsroom can be matched with Newsmatched and our local community challenge fund. So if you give us, a dollar, that suddenly becomes $3 that can support local journalism at the Tucson Sentinel. Go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog and learn all about it. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a weekend watch with some cool things to do and to get involved with around Tucson this weekend.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
A proposed $2.6 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 88,000 jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI. I'm Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel, and joining me is Paul Ingram, our senior reporter at the Sentinel. And I got to tell you, our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, are ready to welcome you back with open arms, just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's so much to do and see in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. There's plenty of social distancing still there. You can go check out the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing, the many things to do and the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. I guess there's some stuff to do a little bit closer to home this weekend. Ken Carr from The Drive, break it down for us. What's going on?
All right, the big one is El Tour de Tucson.
Never heard of it.
It's a little bike thing.
Okay.
All right, so it gets underway really around 7 o'clock. They used to start it in front of the where the Children's Museum and Armory Park is, but Armory Park is under construction right now. They're making it better. So they've moved over the start over to the Tucson Convention Center. So it starts there, and for years we had the route that went up north.
Into the foothills.
Oro Valley. They've decided to switch to a south route this time. So there's over 10,000 bicycle riders. If you need information about this, go hunt for it online if you're worried about it, whether it's going to affect somewhere you drive tomorrow. And I came up with this great idea, though, that if I ever was going to think about being in El Tour, then maybe I would take my car and I would put a big bicycle graphic on the side, and I would ride with them, and it would be a lot easier than actually having to bicycle it.
You don't have to pedal.
I know.
You can put the pedal to the metal instead.
Hey, my wife did that when she was pregnant. She managed to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my dad has done it several times.
Speaking of pedal to the metal, didn't you mention something about a classic car?
Well, The Drive is giving away a 1967 Ford Fairlane 500 tomorrow. So for about the last 2 months, we've been qualifying people. It's roughly going to be about a 1 in 100 chance. That's how many people have qualified at this point. And you could be one of the final five. The last five people that are going to be qualifiers, so we're going to do that at 11:30 until noon. So if you show up at 11:30 at the Bookman's Entertainment Exchange, Stone and River, and not only you can see the car that you're going to win, which is a fantastic lime gold, but on it kind of looks like the metallic P that was in the Vacation movie, the car that they drove. Remember the car?
Yeah, the station wagon.
Yep, same color. Anyway, that's starting at 11:30. Second prize, 50 albums of music that The Drive plays on a modern vintage record player to play them on. Third prize is a 4-foot-tall Pac-Man video game, which is pretty awesome.
That was one of my wife's first cars was a late 60s Ford Fairlane, and she still raves about that thing. So that's one heck of a prize.
And it's a little bonus here. It actually has air conditioning.
Wow.
Back in the 60s, yeah, that was a very expensive option.
That's sweet.
A couple other things real briefly. There's also Tucson Holiday Ice kicks off this weekend. That's the ice rink that's in front of the Tucson Convention Center.
And it has gotten cooler out, so.
Yeah, so it should be harder, yeah. Ice. I don't know. And also there's a Fall Artisans Market at Tucson Museum of Art that kicks off today through Sunday at the historic block at 140 North Main.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Ken Carr.
Thank you.
Got to let you folks know that the Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is solely, wholly, utterly, absolutely responsible for its content. On behalf of Bill, longtime executive assistant Rosemary Brandt, the entire team here at Bustos Media, I'm Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel, Paul Ingram, Ken Carr, Russ McSpadden, thanks for stopping by. And everybody out there, as we're heading into the holidays, please take care, be merry and happy, but be safe. Thanks so much.